Welcome to the Blue Sky Podcast,
brought to you by Cambridge University Science Magazine.
I'm Ruby.
And I'm Simone.
Every 2 weeks, we speak to local researchers, university staff and students, and anyone who works in science to learn about their research and activities, hear about the work that they do, and uncover what goes on behind the scenes.
If you want to get in touch with a question, suggestion, or just want to be featured on the podcast, just drop us a tweet. Our handle is at BlueSciPod.
And you can also email us at bluescipodcast@gmail.com.
Today our guest is Tadyaradzwa Mangoma, who is a PhD candidate in the Fluids and Advanced Manufacturing Group at the Institute of Manufacturing and works in collaboration with the Bioelectronics Group in the Department of Engineering. Her research is focused on fabricating proof-of-concept additively manufactured neuromorphic and neural network devices based on organic electrochemical transistors. We spoke to her about her research, what it's like working in such a fast-paced interdisciplinary field, and what the future could hold for personalized bioelectronic medicine. The Blue Sky Podcast is sponsored by Griner Bio One, who supply laboratory, diagnostic, and medical products to research institutions, higher education, the NHS, and others across the UK. For details of their full product range, visit www.gbo.com.
Welcome to the Blue Sky Podcast, Tanya. You're in the field of fluids and advanced manufacturing research. So can you tell us what is your research on specifically?
So my research tries to use additive manufacturing, commonly like the public uses 3D printing, to print electronic devices that are called neuromorphics. And neuromorphics are basic devices that work like the brain. And the neuromorphics that I use, they're based on electrochemical transistors, organic electrochemical transistors, actually. And it all comes together that, you know, I 3D print this component that works like a transistor, but also like a brain. And then I then use all like the manufacturing knowledge that I have from the fluids and advanced manufacturing team to kind of like see the best way to actually print the devices.
So does that require doing the device development as well, or just learning, or like looking at the processes that are used to manufacture? Or do you have to look at like kind of the kind of more the research on the actual like bioelectronic side as well?
Yeah, so you have to do like the whole thing. So it's more, I have to design my own devices. So like part of my research is actually designing a device. So there are different devices for different things. Some devices just are like the one kind of thing that works. Others have like 20 other things attached to them, or like they work like as a group. So it's more about designing them, and then after you design them, you design how they'll actually be manufactured, and then each manufacturing step you have to like make sure it actually works and it actually like qualifies that part. And at the same time, you need to know the electronic specs, because like without knowing how the device works and the electronics, you can't actually manufacture it. It's like all like together. Mm-hmm. It's like the whole spread. You have to know how it works and how to manufacture it and whatnot. The whole thing.
So that sounds quite a challenge then, to go from the sort of basic science of it and a sort of like prototype device all the way looking through to how it can be manufactured and that process. It sounds quite expansive. So you mentioned additive manufacturing, and like you said, the most common example of that is 3D printers. So apart from that, what are sort of the big sort of products that come out of additive manufacturing? Are there different materials that you can use, or what sort of things can you make?
So like I said before, like additive manufacturing is like another term different from 3D printing. So it's like a blanket term for a bunch of different techniques. So any material you can think about, metal, ceramics, polymers, you know, you can use them using a certain type of additive manufacturing technique. So products can range from car parts, space parts, because that's what people usually like think about when they think of AM, like, you know, in industry. And they can go down to like plastics things like toys and stuff like that. So it's a very big range of things. And people are even doing biological tissues, for example, they do 3D bioprinting. So it's very, very varied. So any material you can think of, if it needs to be manufactured and you can like put it on top of each other using layers, then you can in theory 3D print it. So just think of a product and we have it there. Mostly though, I do focus on polymer-based materials because that's where I stick to.
So within additive manufacturing, obviously there's all these different types of processes. in terms of neuromorphic devices specifically, I guess, what are the like key challenges in that field? Is it the actual development of how you're making like the design, or are there also challenges to the actual printing itself because you're dealing with different kinds of materials?
So I would say the additive manufacturing techniques I use are something called fused deposition modeling, and I also use something called gel extrusion, and the third one is inkjet printing. In all those three fields, there are individual challenges. For example, in fused deposition modeling, FDM, the accuracy is horrible. The precision is horrible for the technique in general. And for instance, FDM is the 3D printers that you see people using plastic to make toys with. So the material development for that, if you want to have something that is electronic and conducting, it's not developed to actually make something that is rigorous for science. So like the challenges I do face, that like challenges I'm like, okay, if this is going to work in like an actual setting, we will need to have a material that is specifically made for this application. And at the same time, at inkjet printing, it's been there. Oh, by the way, inkjet printing is similar to the printing that we do on paper, like in like offices, so like that type of printing. They've developed it for newspapers, they've developed it, but they have developed for like electronics, but it's not rigorous enough to be like, okay, we're going to do this to form neuromorphic devices. Because you have to remember, neuromorphic devices are supposed to like work at a molecular level, like they're like literally like trying to act like the brain using molecules. Like it's like at that level of precision, things need to be perfect. And to get that, we have to go back to like the materials being made, the equipment being made, the accuracy, how to integrate the two kind of technologies together. So these are all challenges, like, you know, I think about just, you know, in general. So it's like, it's a lot of difficulties throughout the field. I mean, it's far from perfect, honestly. Mm-hmm.
You look specifically at neuromorphic devices, and your research is centered around that. Could you explain exactly what your project within that is, and the type of devices that would typically come out of a project like yourselves?
To start off with neuromorphic devices, like I said before, they try and work like the brain. And in particular, the ones I work with, they do this really cool thing. I think action potentials, basically. So they spike. Okay, so they spike like action potentials in the brain, and they actually retain some of the memory. And that is like the basis of learning in the brain. So like at the synaptic level. And what my device is trying to do is to mimic that, but not in a device that is made from like silicon technology or lithography, but using additive manufacturing. And the plan from that part is, well, if we can do a device or additively manufacture a device that works like the brain, for applications that have been identified in OECTs, which include drug delivery, biosensing, and brain machine interfaces, they need to be specific to that person. Like if I'm going to the hospital and I'm like injured in a specific way, I'm gonna need a specific device to kind of acknowledge that specific thing. And my topic is just going like, okay, so we could additively manufacture this, because to do that, you just need to make a CAD model that is different. So mine is more like a feasibility check on if it's possible to actually make those devices. And after that, how complicated can we make those devices? Because another part that goes hand in hand with neuromorphic devices is neural networks. So kind of like, you know, in the brain, when you have a couple of synapses together, you make a neural network. So could we make a neural network from additive manufacturing, and how complicated can we get? And could we use it as a technique to actually study what is happening in the brain, or study how people are actually capturing data in machine learning, for instance? So that is like the range of what my PhD does, trying to make the proof of concept devices, which are basically, okay, can we make this so that if it was going to be used in an actual setting, individual people can have like customized, personalized bioelectronic medications. And then at the other end we have, could we make it super complicated so that we could actually use this as like an actual like machine learning, or in this case, we'll call it deep learning architecture. So that's like, that is the extent of my PhD. If I do those, I graduate, basically.
I mean, it sounds super, like you're spanning so many different research fields and so many different questions, very, like, interdisciplinary. I guess, what was your background coming into it? What made you so, interested in this specific problem?
Oh, that is such a funny story. basically, I knew nothing. So because I was part of like a CDT, like a Center of Doctoral Training, I came with money and I could just do whatever PhD I wanted. I didn't know how to do additive manufacturing or what it was. I didn't know how to do any modeling or CAD drawing. I did not know anything about neuromorphic devices, but I really wanted to do it. So I was like, oh, you know, this sounds interesting. So like, I just asked the supervisor, you know, could I actually, I want to do something called 4D printing. And he was like, oh, there's another guy who's like printing brain stack stuff. Do you want to do that? And so I was like, yeah, sure, we can print that. So like, that was my background. There was nothing concrete that like helped me. My background had nothing to do with this, but it was just nice having this field that was crazy and really, really massive to just play around with. And yeah.
That's amazing, because it just shows how flexible the whole PhD process is. And yeah, if you find an interest in an area you wouldn't expect, then it just shows that you can do that. It's really cool. Definitely. And so it seems like this field within the additive manufacturing context is fairly young. Would you say that's true? So what is the state of the field at the moment? Like what's kind of generally known? And you know, because I guess when you speak about these bioelectronics, so my mind instantly goes to sort of crazy implants and like, you know, all these different
amazing things, science fictiony stuff.
And so I guess how far are we from something like that, especially in this field where it seems quite new?
In the groups I'm in, one of my groups is in bioelectronics. So I'm shared between two groups. And in that group, they literally just focus on devices that I've made, on like the science I tried to print. And they put it in like animals and cadavers. And they do amazing things. They've done it for epilepsy, where they put like actual devices in the brain, and then they can stop seizures of epilepsies. They've done something called deep brain stimulation, where someone, I forgot exactly what they have, but they can stop shaking their hands and having tremors. And in the brain, they kind of stimulate it and they stop, and they can actually have the mobility back. And so this field of bioelectronics in itself is being developed very, very well and very rapidly. And it's based on this organic electrochemical transistor materials and some of these really unique semiconducting polymer materials. And then when it comes to additive manufacturing, on the other hand, it's now starting to be used, for electronics. So people are starting to just do general electronics using additive manufacturing. They make electrical contacts that can recover over time. They're starting to just like inject print devices on them on their own that actually can use as transistors. But bringing the two fields together is very, very novel. Like, not many people have actually made neuromorphic devices in general. Not many people make them that are additive manufacturing. So it's like a really unique, like one of those like really kind of cutting edge. And even if you were to find a device that is being printed using, which is neuromorphic and is also using some type of additive manufacturing, it's highly unlikely that they use two types of additive manufacturing together. So I use field deposition modeling and inject printing together. And I'm trying, so it's a very one of those like really kind of like, you know, not many people are doing it, but if it's done, you know, it's very useful. But yeah, it's that interesting. But there are developments happening around the field in general. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in terms of applying kind of additive manufacturing techniques to bioelectronics, often when people think about like brain enhancing or like, you know, kind of performance enhancing devices that could be used in the future, we often come up with this like kind of ethical question of like, well, you know, who will have access to these very expensive things? And, you know, how can we make sure that, you know, they're not used in like a malignant way and things like that? So I guess on the other hand, additive manufacturing is a very like very easily scaled way of producing things. So do you think if we were able to use additive manufacturing for bioelectronics and just in general, I guess, do you think it's kind of like an equalizer in that sense to like making more cheap devices and stuff?
So to be honest, especially for the ones I use, like the printers I use literally go for £300 and the materials like, you know, $5. So like £5. So like, it's like really accessible. So the one thing that I really like about this kind of like concept of using additive manufacturing and inject printing, which again I say like it's like the printers in your like the literal printers like that you put on paper, they're really accessible. Many people could actually just buy them and use them to actually make products that work. And I mentioned earlier on you could use them for biosensors, and if you could actually sense, for example, like or detect a certain type of disease or something using the additive manufactured easy to make devices, it's easier. Let's say pick, I don't know, a country that is far, far away, and you just send a 3D printer some material, just like print as you like whatever thing you want to do for detection. That makes the process extra easy. You don't need a clean room. You don't need expensive, like, you know, facilities. You just need that thing. But then at the other end, if we make it very, very easy for people to make, and then we introduce this whole idea of bioelectronics in it, where you can actually then have people's data and like health monitoring. Yeah, ethics are questioned. And you know what? Yeah, ethics are questioned. Because like, if I can print and like take data from people and what they do, then yeah, it's a tricky place. But my opinion is it's tricky, honestly. But yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like quite the conundrum, really, because you simultaneously want people to have access to this type of sort of, you know, product, but equally you don't want people to misuse it. So that's really, really hard. And do you think that within this field there is a push towards looking at these sort of things, like so for instance, if you were to design something that would kind of be released sort of in a way that people could print it and use it themselves, like would data privacy you know, agreements have to be brought in, and legalities and things like that? Is it something that you have to collaborate with in terms of the legal side of things?
I mean, it actually depends, because it could work in one really good way, that, you know, when you have a device, and because it kind of senses and it also delivers. So you have a device that is put on your arm and it just senses and delivers, and no one can get your data. So it's kind of secure in that way. So there won't be an agreement. But then it's like, if someone then goes like, oh, but for me to do it, I have to put a chip in it to record every data point that is being produced, then we have some legality issues that at that point. So like, it's basically how good companies are going to be if they actually take it up. If companies are like, we're just doing this to save humanity, then they won't put a chip inside to detect everything that is happening, because then it's like really secure. But then if there's like really, really companies who like data, which are a lot, then again, yeah, another one of those, you know.
Yeah, but I guess it's hard, isn't it? Because I guess in some countries in the world, if it were a way of monitoring a certain bodily state, say like blood glucose or anything like that, and it was a country where you have to pay quite high health insurance premiums anyway, and it's somehow the health insurance companies got it and blah, 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 blah. I guess there can be a lot of like knock-on effects.
Yeah, I think there's always those kind of questions when it comes to like medical ethics, yeah. Like who knows about, you know, your health records and so on. I guess it would just make it harder to know, because it wouldn't be a piece of paper. It would be like some data in a chip that you, as a normal, like, you know, as a patient, you might not even know is being collected. So yeah, that's really interesting. I was going to ask, in terms of the actual way that you, going back to kind of focusing on your work, how does that kind of work day to day, right? Because like, I'm just imagining these like machines that print things, but then end up like testing the devices to see if they work? Do you have to, like, how do you come up with all these new ways of seeing, like, testing the viability of the proof of concept devices that you make? How does that kind of, what's the day in the life, you know?
Oh, there is no day, which is one thing I absolutely love. I'm yet to be bored with my PhD, because there's no day that is like the same. So like, some days I'm designing, some days I'm in the like electronic like lab trying to get like, some days I'm like cutting the device in half, trying to figure out why it's not working. So each day, depending on which point I am in like making a device, is different from one another. So I do totally different things. Sometimes I'm manufacturing, sometimes I'm like reading theory. So it's like very dependent on the day and what I do. But for the most time, I am sitting down reading to understand what the hell I'm doing. Cause like, it's either I'm like doing, each part I'm doing for my device, it's always gonna be something I don't know. So I'm like reading about it and then I do it. So it's always different. But if I'm gonna say what I spend my most time doing, it's reading to try and figure out what is happening, cause everything goes wrong, honestly. But yeah, there's no specific day.
Yeah, and it sounds like, as we mentioned before, like it sounds so interdisciplinary. So with respect to that, do you have quite a lot of collaboration with different people? So for instance, if it's neuromorphic devices, are you in contact with neuroscientists or bio people? And if so, how do you find the interactions with them? Is it easy, or can it be a little bit difficult to try and for each side to try and get their point across?
So I'm already in two different labs, and my first lab, they do like a lot of manufacturing. So like when I don't know how to manufacture, I just go to one of the people who's manufacturing. The second lab, they do bioelectronics. So if I want to like ask something about, you know, how does this work? And there are a lot of like electrical engineering people as well in there. I just ask them as well. So I'm really like lucky and fortunate that the two core groups that I do need, and the two core parts, which is bioelectronics and additive manufacturing, that I do need, there are two groups that are just there for me to access. And then when I don't understand something, there's professors like in other parts of the world who I just like go like, so how does your device work? Because it doesn't make sense using any theory. And they're really responsive, and like, they say small bunch. So it's a good, yeah. And the interactions themselves, I find them quite challenging because they speak different languages. If I look at people who are doing manufacturing, and I'm talking about like electrical engineering, we're doing totally different things. And it's like translating that and understanding and being the middleman to all that science is quite interesting because you get like a big group, but then I'm like, oh, it's tiring. but yeah, it's lucky I have the access to them, but then it's very difficult to kind of like get it into like one language that everyone understands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that sounds quite challenging in general whenever you're in like an interdisciplinary field. But then at the same time, there can be some benefits to seeing the same problem from so many different angles as well. Do you think that maybe perhaps if we start to have those conversations more, like in terms of people that are maybe more on the more basic research and then people that are further down the long line of like the more engineering aspects of that, do you think that could maybe lead to a lot of problems being solved faster, I guess, if people weren't so like in their little bubbles?
Definitely. I mean, honestly, like I'll take myself as an example. Like, you know, like there's like computer people who are doing computer stuff, and there's like, you know, neuroscience people who are doing their neuroscience stuff, and then there's like electrical engineers, and like I'm like, if they all came together, like we could have like deep learning like architectures, you know, just like that, just throw money at it and give all these people like one room. But again, it's very difficult because in those specific fields, like if I was to pick, for example, neuroscience, there is a whole lot more to be like understood that is way too deep for like just an interdisciplinary field. So I do appreciate people in their fields who are deep in there, but we do need more people doing interdisciplinary stuff because out of those collaboration, it comes really nice things, like really amazing. Like honestly, if you look at, especially in the bioelectronics group that I am in right now, people couple two very different fields together, and out of it comes really amazing work that you could never think of alone in a specific field. You do need to have that exposure to other things. So I appreciate fields are big and, you know, there's like deep stuff to be learned, but collaboration and interdisciplinary fields, very important.
Yeah, no, I guess you always get something really unexpected happening out of it because it required that those two ingredients to actually make it happen.
To actually work. Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, I bet it keeps it very relevant as well because, like you said, sometimes if you stick in your field, you go so deep and you forget why you're there. Whereas if there's a common goal across disciplines, then perhaps it's slightly more relevant to what's needed in science right now in general. And so with respect to this, obviously you came into your PhD with a very flexible mindset in as much as what you wanted to study and you were happy to sort of go into a field that you perhaps weren't as familiar with. What are your hopes for the future? Would you like to stay in academia? Would you like to go into industry? Would you want to go for something completely different? Is it something you've thought about, or is it just, you know, I've got to get the PhD done and then I'll think about it type situation?
I thought about it a lot after like the first couple of months of my PhD because I was like, what am I doing? This is like really weird because like when you tell people you're doing this, they're like, you're just throwing like, you know, buzzwords around additive manufacturing, neuromorphic, you know what I mean? So I was like, what exactly am I doing? So I did my research at who's working at this right now, who's doing neuromorphic computing, who wants to actually make this stuff. And like, I found a couple of really good companies and like I fell in love with IBM like straight away. So I was like, I definitely want to continue what I'm doing and I definitely want to develop the field of like additive manufacturing and for bioelectronics and especially neuromorphic devices. And I'm hoping when I graduate I actually get a role at like a big company, hopefully IBM. edit that out. But yeah. But you know, to just develop, because I really see the potential, but I understand there's a lot of work that needs to be done to like bring it all together, because starting from the materials themselves, they need to be better. The equipment itself needs to be better. There's so much work to be done, but then after it's done, the impact is amazing. Mm-hmm. So I really would like to stay in the field and actually continue doing exactly mm-hmm. this.
And in terms of the kind of hopes and dreams of the field, I guess, what are the kind of main, not main targets, but what can we expect from bioelectronics in the future, I guess? If people finish listening to this podcast and someone asks them, what was your podcast, this episode you listened to, what was it about? And they go, oh, yes, neuromorphic devices. Like, what can we expect from neuromorphic devices in the future?
I hope in the future when you go to, like, your doctor and, you realize you have this specific pain and it requires this much paracetamol, they'll just like print off a device for you, put it on your arm, for instance, tailored to you, and it will just dose you with however much paracetamol you need and detect how much has been given or your response over time. And that will like cut, it'll be like one of those like groundbreaking things, basically, in medicine. That is like my hopes and dreams, but who knows? Mm-hmm. It'll be pretty nice if that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like such an exciting field, an emerging field. So thank you so much for filling us in about it. I mean, I for one had very limited knowledge of this area, so it's been really, really interesting to chat with you about it, and I really, really hope all of your PhD work can get going again soon off the back of the lockdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me. It's really, really nice, and every PhD likes to talk about their PhD.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We really hope you enjoyed this week's episode with Tanya, talking all about additive manufacturing and neuromorphic devices. If you enjoyed this episode and want to listen to some more, you can find us on anywhere you can get podcasts, and give us a like, subscribe to us, and then you can have a look through our back catalogue, listen to all our old episodes, and also stay notified whenever we have a new episode. You could also contact us on Twitter at BlueSciPod, and you can also email us at podcast@blueSci.co.uk. That's it for this week, and we'll see you next time.